I'm Montse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Liberation Day. President Trump touts new tariffs that he says will boost the U.S. economy. We're at the White House, taking a pause. Myanmar's military declares a ceasefire to ease relief after last week's devastating earthquake. Shelter from the storm. A Catholic parish stays untouched after a terrifying tornado. And life and legacy. We take a look back on the 20th anniversary of Pope St. John Paul II's death. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, it's the announcement the world was waiting to hear. And from the Rose Garden today, that major announcement came. President Donald Trump's both praised and criticized tariff plan unveiled in detail, laying out who will be charged, what, and how much. The tariffs arriving on what the president has dubbed Liberation Day. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen, what do we know now?
Monse, good evening to you. A very big day here at the White House. In my hand is the tariff plan as my camera operator zooms in out here. The White House passed it out earlier at that event today in the Rose Garden you mentioned. It lists countries around the globe and the various tariffs they will pay. Keep in mind, a minimum baseline of 10% for a charge. Now, for example, the top of the list here, China will pay 34%, the EU 20%, and so forth.
President Donald Trump talks tariffs, announcing late this afternoon before the cameras.
This is one of the most important days, in my opinion, in American history. It's our declaration of economic independence.
Trump believes the tax on foreign imports will help America's financial future.
But now it's our turn to prosper, and in so doing, use trillions and trillions of dollars to reduce our taxes and pay down our national debt, and it'll all happen very quickly.
But a Marquette Law School poll shows a majority of Americans oppose tariffs. 58% think tariffs hurt the U.S. economy. The same percentage think Trump's policies will increase inflation. Earlier in London, at Parliament, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer addressed the tariffs.
Let me be clear with the House. A trade war is in nobody's interests. And the country deserves, and we will take, a calm, pragmatic approach. That's why constructive talks are progressing to agree a wider economic prosperity deal with the U.S.
President Trump believes other countries have been ripping off the U.S. for years, and he wants to bring manufacturing back to America.
Jobs and factories will come roaring back into our country, and you see it happening already. We will supercharge our domestic industrial base. We will pry open foreign markets and break down foreign trade barriers.
It was called the Make America Wealthy Again event in the Rose Garden today. It got going just after the markets, which have taken a real hit lately, closed at 4 p.m. Eastern. The Dow ended up well over 200 points today. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
For more on the tariffs, let's bring in Greg McBride. He's the chief financial analyst for Bankrate. Greg, how will imposing a 10% baseline tax on imports from all countries affect American families?
Well, in the near term, it's going to mean higher costs. And I think, you know, that's really what's resonating with households. That's why you've seen consumer confidence plunge the way that it has, because household budgets have already been stretched and strained by a several years worth of inflation and high prices. So adding on top of those already high prices, that's really weighing on consumer confidence.
And I've seen that you've made commentary about people dipping into their savings. Let's talk about something that's concrete. There will be a 25% tariff on all imported cars. Who ends up paying for that?
Ultimately, the car buyer. So, if you've been spending the last couple of weekends test driving and walking the lots, you probably want to get that deal done here in the next couple of weeks. The cars that are on the lot now are not subject to tariffs because they're already here. But those that have yet to come into the U.S., they will be subject to tariffs. And so that car that you might otherwise buy a month or 2 months or 3 months down the road, that's where you're likely to see a much higher sticker price reflective of those tariffs.
So you think that really is going to affect the price of cars going forward? Do you think it's going to affect car sales?
Yes, I think it will. I mean, in some ways, you've already seen some of that demand pulled forward, people rushing in to buy cars now. I don't know that I completely advocate for that strategy, but nonetheless, people are doing it. Used cars are an option too, right? So if already pricey new cars are now out of your price range with that tariff tacked on top, used cars are an option. And so that's where you could see a little bit of supply and demand. If all of a sudden there's a lot more demand for used cars than there is supply, that could push up prices on used cars as well, even though they are not subject to tariffs.
Well, let's talk about these international trading partners. In February, the president announced tariffs on Canada and on Mexico. And a day after the announcement, he pulled them back. And that's just one example of this tariff whiplash, as we like to call it, and the effects it's having on the market. If the president does that again with these tariffs, what will that do to the economy?
Well, I think it's that uncertainty that's already a headwind to the economy. We talked about how consumer confidence has plunged. But business confidence has really slumped as well. Why? Because there's so much uncertainty. And, you know, that on again, off again, you know, what's exempt, what's not exempt, that kind of thing. Businesses can't plan around that. And when there's that type of uncertainty, businesses don't go out and hire a bunch of people. They don't expand production. They sit back and wait for the dust to settle. You know, they'd want to know the rules of the game before they get in. And so that in and of itself can be a headwind to the economy. I think businesses, more than anything, they just want uncertainty. They just want to know what the rules of the game are.
And is there any world where they realize that this is the new way to operate, this kind of unstable environment, and that the economy can't stabilize around that?
I think, you know, businesses are very adaptive, but it's, you know, you got to know the rules of the road. And, you know, I think once that's in place, then, you know, businesses are willing to make investments and plan around that. But, you know, when there's not even certainty about those type of things, that's what makes it so difficult.
Well, we'll be watching that carefully. Thank you so much, Greg.
Thank you, Monty.
Despite Republicans keeping their two House seats in Florida's special election last night, some Democrats say the margins show voters are unhappy with President Trump and Elon Musk and their efforts to reshape the federal government. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now to explain. Eric?
Good evening, Monty. Republicans are breathing a sigh of relief, being able to keep and expand their majority in the U.S. House. But Democrats are claiming victory as well, saying that these two races shouldn't even have been as close as they were. Districts where Trump won by more than 30 points last November. And Democrats add this is a prelude to a blue wave coming in 2026.
And last night we just saw the early returns, a preview of coming attractions for the Republicans in the elections next year if they continue down this very dangerous path.
Republican lawmakers say there's nothing to worry about.
Republican voters turned out not to the degree of a presidential election, because that doesn't ever really occur in specials, but they turned out, and both Jimmy Patronis and Randy Fine had double-digit victories. So everything in Florida is just fine, and it's going to get better from here.
All the talking heads are trying to spin it like we've discovered a new planet or something, but I thought it was, you know, pretty predictable.
In Wisconsin, Democrat-backed Susan Crawford won the closely watched Wisconsin Supreme Court race 57-43% in what was the most expensive judicial election in American history. That court could have an impact on future abortion cases and congressional redistricting. Voters also passed a ballot measure to enshrine current voter ID laws into the state's constitution, protecting them from future court challenges. President Trump touted the victory, writing on Truth Social, quote, "It should allow us to win Wisconsin just like I did in the presidential election for many years to come." Democrats are speaking out against President Trump's new national mandate, requiring prospective voters to show proof of U.S. citizenship to register to vote. They believe they will win in court.
Donald Trump doesn't have the power to decide how federal elections are governed. That power is given to the voters, state legislatures, and Congress itself.
Leader Jeffries is also challenging Speaker Mike Johnson to bring the SAVE Act to the floor for a vote. The bill would require identification of U.S. citizenship in order to vote in all federal elections. Jeffries claims it's another way Republicans want to suppress voter turnout. But Republicans say all they want to do is make sure U.S. citizens and only U.S. citizens are the ones who are going to vote in future elections. A vote on the bill could come as early as next week. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Today, hundreds of pro-lifers turned out at the Supreme Court as justices heard oral argument in a case out of South Carolina. The state had banned taxpayer funding from its Medicaid program from going to Planned Parenthood. Then they were sued, and the case made its way to the Supreme Court. Ultimately, justices will decide whether pro-life states can pull Medicaid funding away from abortion facilities. For more on this case and the pro-life reaction, be sure to stay tuned for EWTN's Pro-Life Weekly. They have reaction from Jenny Lichter, new head of the March for Life. It airs tonight, right after this, at 6:30 p.m. You won't want to miss it. Meanwhile, in Nevada, a federal judge ruled that a law requiring parents or guardians to be notified before a minor gets an abortion can be enforced. The law is actually 40 years old, but it has never been enforced because it was found unconstitutional based on Roe v. Wade. But as you know, Roe v. Wade was reversed in 2022, clearing the way for the law to go into effect. The judge ruled on Monday that the law can take effect on April 30th of this year. Now to the Middle East, Israeli officials have announced a major expansion of their military operation in Gaza. Today, they announced that they plan to seize parts of the area and incorporate them into Israel's security zones. They've also ordered residents to evacuate the southern city of Rafah and move north. Today, Gaza's civil defense said that 19 bodies were recovered from a bombed-out building that was used as shelter for displaced Palestinians. Israel said it targeted terrorists in the area and that measures were taken to lessen the risk of civilian deaths. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including cleanup and recovery. New developments in the civil war in Myanmar amid the ongoing devastation from last week's earthquakes. And a look back at the life and legacy of Pope St. John Paul II, 20 years after his death. Myanmar's ruling military has declared a temporary ceasefire in the country's civil war in order to facilitate relief efforts after last week's devastating earthquake. The truce is set to run for 20 days until April 22nd. The war had already caused a dire humanitarian crisis in the nation before the earthquake even struck. The military's high command says the truce is aimed at showing compassion for people affected by the quake. Meanwhile, the number of dead from the quake has risen to more than 3,000. Rescue operations are underway with the help of various other nations. One daring rescue saw a team use a small camera to locate a man underneath a damaged hotel building. State-run media says that later in the day, another man was saved from the same building. 20 years after the death of Pope St. John Paul II, the church remembers and celebrates the saint who not only changed the course of history by advocating for peace and human dignity, but touched millions of hearts worldwide. EWTN Vatican journalist Magdalena Volinska-Ridi has more.
Salve Regina.
April 2, 2005. Countless crowds gathered in St. Peter's Square, gazing anxiously up at the windows of the Apostolic Palace where Pope John Paul II was spending his last days.
A candle had been lit, according to Polish custom, in the window of the room where the Pope was agonizing. Then, as soon as he passed away, lights were turned on in the square. And even before the announcement of the Holy Father's death, we understood that the Pope had died.
It was the end of an era. Gone to the Lord was not only a great Pope who had changed the history of mankind, but above all, a man who had been a shepherd, a father to millions across the globe. Also in the Vatican, he deeply marked the lives of many.
I greeted him 2 days before his death, on Thursday afternoon, before he passed away. He took my hand since he couldn't speak, and that look in his eyes, that strong grip of his hand, stays with me always, and truly accompanies me every day of my life.
Now, 20 years later, thousands of people are in Rome once again to honor the late Pope's memory. A special concert was organized in the Basilica of Santa Maria Maggiore, where cardinals, bishops, and friends of the Saint Pope came together to commemorate him. The President of Poland also traveled to Rome on the occasion on behalf of his nation, the nation that owes much of its freedom to the Polish Pope.
No one needs to be explained how important this moment is for us, and how important for us Poles is this place and the opportunity to pay tribute, but also to pray at the tomb of the Holy Father for our homeland, for Poland, for the world, and for the health of Pope Francis.
In the afternoon, St. Peter's Basilica was filled with the faithful for a solemn Mass celebrated by the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin. The Mass was attended by many cardinals and bishops, including many of those who were appointed by Pope St. John Paul II.
He never sought to please men, but only God. He lived solely before his eyes.
It was a powerful reminder of how many lives he had touched during his papacy, something that is as clear today as it was on the night of his passing 20 years ago, when crowds of young people gathered in vigil beneath the Pope's windows.
A large group of young people had been keeping vigil for the second day. I went out to the square and told them, "Go home." But they replied, "He was always with us, and now we want to be with him." And they stayed. The youth never left him until the very end.
Still today, 20 years later, Pope St. John Paul II holds a special place in the hearts of millions who continue to travel to Rome to pray at his tomb in St. Peter's Basilica, a powerful source of strength and grace. In Rome, Magdalena Wolinska-Riedi, EWTN News Nightly.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Walking with the Lord. New hiking trails bring pilgrims on a spiritual journey through Lebanon. Plus, a parish priest is thanking the help of the saints for protecting his church. The Christian community in Lebanon dates back to the very first days of the church. It's home to several dozen Catholic saints and blesseds, including the remarkable figures of St. Marin and St. Charbel Maklouf. Now pilgrims may be able to visit the great Christian sites in Lebanon in a journey inspired by the famed pilgrim trail of the Camino de Santiago. EWTN News Nightly's Margarita Colassi reports.
It is called Caminos Lebanon, a series of four new hiking trail categories that connect historical and religious sites across the country's diverse terrain, bringing pilgrims on a spiritual journey.
So it's not just tourism that we are walking through the Camino, but it's also experience ourselves, putting ourselves in front of God.
Home to over 6,000 Christian and Muslim sites, Lebanon has a rich spiritual heritage. Through curated Christian hiking trails, Caminos Lebanon invites participants on a profound journey of faith.
These shrines are spread across the southern, northern, and Bekaa regions of Lebanon. While the initiative highlights cultural, religious, spiritual, and economic tourism, its deeper significance lies in the journey towards the Kingdom of Glory.
The project is a collaboration between the government and Caminos Lebanon, designed to revitalize tourism and provide an opportunity for cultural exploration.
We would like to encourage Caminos Lebanon and encourage people from all over the world to come and discover all the different Lebanese trails and from all different religions.
While the looming threat of war may hang over the region, that is not stopping the Lebanese from moving forward with hope and happiness. This is Raya's Camino of Hope, designed for youth and by youth.
When I was drawing the maps for this Camino, I was thinking about a way to attract youth to walk this Camino. And we chose seven churches, and actually we got inspired from St. Philippe Neri. While walking in Raya's Camino, I feel like there's hope for Lebanon first, for youth. Yesterday when you were at Kirke, I saw how much people were interested in this Camino. And I got really happy because there is actually hope and there is faith in youth here in Lebanon.
Caminos Lebanon is more than a series of trails. During the Jubilee year, themed Pilgrims of Hope, Caminos Lebanon becomes an open invitation for believers and travelers alike to rediscover Lebanon's sacred landscapes. Margarita Kalasi, in Kirke, EWTN News Nightly.
Finally tonight, a Catholic parish in Louisiana is thanking the help of saints for keeping it safe during a terrifying night. On Monday night, a powerful E2 tornado tore through the town of Grand Prairie, Louisiana. Though damage was done to the catechism building and the rectory of St. Peter's Parish, the church itself was untouched. And joining us today from St. Peter's Catholic Church is Father Jude Halfin. Father Jude, thank you so much for joining us, especially since you have this beautiful, miraculous story to share with us. Can you explain some of the damage that was done to the property surrounding?
Yes. So early Monday morning, a Category 2 tornado touched down, was on the ground for about 2 miles. And in the area of the church, we have 3 buildings, the church proper, the rectory, and the office building together, and then the CCD building. The office and the rectory and the CCD building was devastated. I was in shock when I got here and saw the damage, but the church itself was completely unscathed. One or two shingles off of the roof of the church, but everything surrounding it was just devastated.
Wow. Well, praise God for what was saved. Now, we understand that you have the relics of a number of saints. Which saints do you have?
So we have St. John Birchman. We have St. Barbara, St. Jean de Chantal, St. John of the Cross, St. Stephen, St. James the Less, St. Anthony of Padua, St. Francis of Assisi, St. Louis, King of France. We have a piece of the veil of Our Blessed Lady.
Wow.
The pallium of St. Joseph, St. James Major, the column of the flagellation of Our Lord, St. Paul, St. Zachariah, St. Peter,
of course.
Wow, you've
got quite an army. Is it true that you credit them with interceding to keep the church safe?
Absolutely. You know, when we were redoing the church, I asked Our Lord and Our Lady, as well as the saints, to kind of protect it, because we're in an area that's very prone to storms and damage. And I tell you, they came through for us on Monday. The way that things have been just kind of falling into place, and how quickly things are moving, all of those things, I think, credited to the intercession of the good saints that we have with us here.
Well, that's beautiful. It's such a gift. Thank you so much, Father Jude, for being with us, and we'll be praying for your recovery.
Thank you. We appreciate it. And yes, keep us in your prayers.
God bless you.
Okay, bye-bye now.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.